Here's some news for you music fans. Recently, WALTZ Channel 4 has learned that not all music lovers have a love for all music. And it looks like it's going double for Marky Mark, as it seems a few would-be critics seem to think he can't pull his own weight in the music industry. Here's a recap of the comments they made.
Yo, man, I think that kid Marky Mark is kind of weak.
I don't know about Marky Mark. I don't think he's hot at all. He needs to pull his pants up or something. I don't know. I don't know what to say about Marky Mark. He's not nothing.
He's not
nothing.
He's not nothing. He's tired of hearing his black
sound. I don't know what you're talking about. He's a little boy.
He's not in the ghetto, man. He ain't gonna hit like that. You know what I'm saying?
Right up, G.
All he's doing is just living off his brother.
As you all know, you just can't believe everything you see and hear, can you?
When does the actual music start?
Just about now. This is where Marky Mark proves him wrong.
We coming back at you.
I'm not just living off of Donnie Wahlberg's table scraps.
Who slept on me? Do yourself a favor and wipe that ass up.
1990 motherfucking.
Linoleum knife. Welcome to Linoleum Knife. We have to discuss this for a second.
Okay.
But first I have to introduce, I'm Dave White. I am your regular Linoleum Knife man. Alonzo Duralde is not here. He's in Seattle at the Seattle International Film Festival, acting as a juror on their short film jury. And he's going to pick...
He's not that short.
He's going to pick the best. He's 5'10 and a half, Alonzo Duralde.
So am I.
Yeah. I don't know how to do anything. I don't know anything about how to make a podcast happen. So I need people who do. So I have my friend William Bibbiani here with me today.
That's me.
People call him Bibbs.
They do.
And although during the course of this podcast, I will be calling him William Bibbiani when I refer to him. Just because I want that rate, and I want your name recognition.
Okay.
To go on, you know.
Yeah.
To the tentacles of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
The what's the porn? Hentai?
Oh yeah, well hentai.
Yeah.
There's a specific
the hentai.
There is a
tentacles
very specific term for tentacle porn though, and I cannot for the life remember what it was.
We reach dozens of people with this podcast, and I want you to benefit from that. So,
okay.
William Bibbiani,
yeah,
Bibbiani,
yeah.
You are from. You're going to fill in my blanks if I get this wrong.
Go ahead.
You are the movie boss at Crave Online.
Yes.
You're the editor
of
the movie content.
Yes,
at CraveOnline.com.
That's correct.
Also, you co-host with
Whitney
Seibold, the B Movie Podcast.
B Movies podcast.
The B Movies.
Well, if you're looking it up, you won't find it. If it doesn't have the name,
yeah,
right. So
yeah.
The B Movies.
The B Movies.
Three words.
B Movies podcast. What else do you do?
Well,
besides appear in the upcoming Spider-Man
versus Superman
Triple X porn parody.
I have a speaking non-sex, unfortunately, cameo in the upcoming porn parody of Spider-Man versus Superman. That is how I spend the bulk of my time. Actually, I'm an editor. Film critic. I've worked on other sites as well, but that's how I spend most of my time is at Crave.
Awesome.
It has its moments.
Have you seen the Spider-Man versus Superman porn parody movie? Have you seen the entire thing yet?
No, they haven't shown me the whole
It's not
thing.
Gay, it's straight.
It's very straight, but it does have a star.
But it's Spider-Man versus Superman.
Yeah.
That should be gay.
That
should be gay.
The guy who is playing Superman is actually a crossover star.
I'm not saying this just because I'm
porn.
A gay.
Yeah.
I'm just saying this
I'm with you on this. It's actually frustrated me when you look at a lot of the pornographic parodies. A lot of them aren't really designed right for porn parodies. Like, you're doing like a Partridge Family porn parody. All the characters are related. The idea of a porn parody...
Is that allowed? If it's a parody...
The Brady Bunch got away with it because they were adopted, but even then they tried to say it was a dream. Even then. And by the way, the twist ending on Not the Brady's XXX is the single most confusing twist ending I have ever seen. I can't tell if it was all a dream, if only the last bit was a dream, if it wasn't a dream, but Marsha Brady was drugged by her uncle / professional pornographer.
There's an uncle?
Yeah, she has an uncle.
In this particular film.
Who gives a truly stellar performance, by the way. Like, legitimately brilliant. But it's like sometimes it's like there's a lot of sexual chemistry even between like the older siblings in the Partridge Family porno parody, but they acknowledge that we can't really go anywhere with this. Do my friends. And that's what it boils down to. Right. So you have to introduce all these other characters, and the whole point is, you know, we don't want to see Batman sleep with some woman, he say, if you want to see Batman sleep with Catwoman.
I understand.
You know, so we want the characters we like to have sex with each other. So doing something that's very male centric, like a superhero thing, it makes a lot of sense.
It does.
I don't really need to see that, but I would like it if it existed. On a personal level, not so much for me. But it would be cool. It would be cool if it existed.
I agree. Yeah. Let's discuss your cassette.
Oh, yes.
You have, because we are our intro music is all on the cassettes that exist in our kitchen that we listen to while we wash the dishes and cook. I assigned you the task of bringing a cassette from home.
And I only had three.
You brought three.
Had three cassettes in my Ewoks, home that aren't like mixes.
The Ewoks fight.
Ewoks join the fight.
Ewoks join the fight, which does not have music on it.
Not really. It's one of those things where you put in the tape and then a kid reads along with it. And
so I used to have those. Yeah.
Which is actually really fun. The characters sound nothing like the characters in the film.
Little records that you put on the little record player.
Yeah, those are fun.
Because I'm old. And then you brought Fine Young Cannibals.
Who are awesome and always will be awesome.
They were awesome. They were awesome. Always, and I don't know what happened to What's-His-Face, Roland Gift. I know that he was acting for a while.
I thought I saw him.
And then I think, I don't know if he stopped. I mean, when you have just like...
You can't stop Roland Gift.
When you have just like a hit album...
Yeah.
How do you... What do you do?
Every track on this album is amazing. Ron the Cook, this is a great album.
Yeah.
Yeah, like if you look at their greatest hits, it's half of it's this album.
It's the Ron the Cook, yes. Now you're...
Ultimately, I ended up going with Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch.
Well, how did you become an owner of this cassette?
I honestly don't know. It has a 99-cent sticker on it, so I imagine I got it at like a yard sale or a flea market or something. And I probably bought it as a joke. Say, well, no one can say I don't own Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch, you gotta believe. And I love it because the sides aren't labeled side one and side two, they're labeled side X and side XL. Marky Mark is extra L.
He was at that time, he was also a model for Calvin Klein underwear. Mm-hmm. And that was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to grab his XL a lot.
Yes.
In that personal appearances.
Yes.
And when he would do his rappings.
His rappings.
Yes. And so...
I could have called him that moment. That's beautiful. Tell me about your rappings.
So so that is the music that introduced the episode.
Yes.
And it was all to prove that Marky Mark is no joke.
No! He is not. I just love the... I love the very notion that Marky Mark could be... That Mark Wahlberg could be riding on Donnie Wahlberg's coattails. And I like also... And this is the reason why I was like, oh, let's go with that one. Is because it's about artists, you know, throwing back at the critics.
Right.
How dare you, sir?
How dare you?
How dare you impugn Marky Mark's musical ability? And then the music that they were just like, and to all y'all critics who think I can't handle this music, check this out. Wow. Well played. It's the best reaction to a critic since The Raven.
Check my DJ. Before we talk about the actual movies,
of which there are many,
speaking of check my DJ,
Word.
I was watching Rockula.
Yes. I have improved yet another human's life.
There's last time we spoke, you recommended that I watch the movie Rockula.
I've recommended this to you multiple times, at least going back as far as the time you and Alonzo appeared on our podcast.
Well, that was my memory is that that was the one and only time that you recommended it to me.
But since.
Unless I was ignoring you the other time.
Well, that's entirely possible. I tell everyone who will listen to watch Rockula. It's one of my go-to films.
Maybe you did tell me many times.
Yeah.
And that's what, maybe that's in my dreams.
Okay.
It finally came to me that I needed to do this.
As long as I'm in your dreams,
I did it. I did it. Okay. And so,
how do you feel?
There's a moment in Rockula.
There are many moments
where Dean Cameron, who is Rockula,
yes, and one of the great legends of the 1980s. One of the,
he was in one of my favorite 80s movies.
Summer School. He was Chainsaw.
Yeah.
Save the Afterbirth for me.
And that he was a vampire. He's an 80s. He's kind of a new wave 80s vampire. Yes, even though it's 1990.
It was shot in the 80s, and the release was delayed.
And it's a canon film, which explains
everything.
But he does some hip hop.
Yep.
In he too does.
He becomes Rapula.
Does some rappings, and he does He's Rapula at one point in the film.
Yeah.
Grabbing his XL.
Yes.
By the way,
of course.
And
like you do, wearing a giant clock.
And yes, yeah. And he at one point one of the lines in his rap is, he's the DJ. I'm the vampire.
Well, you got to set it up.
And there's a thing, and he rhymes it with William Sapphire.
You can read the commentary, but William Sapphire, are you the DJ? No, I'm the vampire. Wicca, wicca, wicca. And bear in mind that in the background, like playing along to the song, is B.B. King and Susan Terrell.
It's Bo Diddley.
Bo Diddley.
Yeah.
Sorry, I get them confused because both have names that sound like poetry.
Bo Diddley's in this movie.
Bo Diddley in a bee suit.
And he's in a bee costume.
Yeah.
And he's dancing.
Bo Diddley's in this. Academy Award nominee Susan Tyrell is in this, also in a bee suit.
Yeah.
Thomas Dolby. In one of his rare acting performances. And he's quite good, if you ask me. I really think that Rockula's going to take off like a bat out of hell.
Tony Basil.
Oh, she is wonderful in this movie, isn't she?
As Rockula's mom.
Yeah.
Who
is constantly bringing guys home and putting them in weird, kinky situations.
She's a whore.
Which is awkward for Rockula because he is...
He's a virgin.
Like 300 years old, still a virgin.
300-year-old virgin.
Yeah. Virginity was a much bigger plot point in 80s
And movies. Has to get...
not so much now.
Not really. Yeah. And then he has to get the girl that
resurrected.
Every 22 years he gets resurrected because he can't.
Yeah.
He can't close the deal.
It's not that he can't close the deal
with this girl.
He doesn't get the chance to close the deal because every time he meets her in like 2 weeks, she is killed by a pirate.
By a pirate.
With a rhinestone peg leg, and he kills her with a ham bone.
Right.
And this has happened like 20 times.
20 times.
Which is quite the coincidence, I feel. that probably shouldn't come up that often.
No.
Makes you wonder who the first one was.
Right.
And this movie is, first off...
It's also a musical.
It's also a musical. Yeah. It's also the music's actually kind of pretty fun. Like, the lyrics are silly, but the music is ridiculous and wonderful.
It's garbage music.
It's garbage music, but it's fun garbage music.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you hum along garbage music. You remember the tune.
I'm just going to say that it's not the garbage music that makes me really love it, like in The Apple,
film. That's fair. I can see that.
The canon bookended the decade of the 80s with musicals.
Yes.
The Apple in 1980 and Rockula in 1990. And The Apple existed in a world that suggested that the 80s would all be more like the 70s.
Yeah.
They would just be more...
And would live forever.
More disco, more shiny outfits, more beard glitter.
Yes.
And...
you could possibly have enough.
And in The Apple, there is plenty of beard glitter.
Oh, yeah.
The men all have 70s beards full of glitter.
Mm-hmm.
The Rockula,
not so much.
Rockula is weird... In that it is also reluctant to push forward as an idea of what the next decade will be like. But it's not asking you to think about that. It's just,
I get the impression that Rockula is like you're watching the 80s die in front of you.
Yeah.
This is like a last gasp.
You absolutely are, because it's full of people from the 80s, like Rodney Bingenheimer has a cameo in this movie. And it's full of people who seem like they were around at the beginning of Los Angeles punk rock in the 70s. Like not the hardcore scene of that came that little next wave with like the bands like Black Flag and whatever.
Yeah.
But like the early bands like the Germs and the Go-Go's and and the people
and
who were all and the people who were all hanging around at the Mask and places like that. And who were already somewhat older than, they weren't high school kids.
No.
They were older people, and they used a lot of heroin. And so
you got it. You use it.
There's a lot of ragged out looking people in Rockula. Yeah.
There are a lot of people you can tell. They're in this movie for one reason and one reason only, and it rhymes with Schmeroin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's a fascinating film, I must say.
It's all over the place. A lot of the jokes are genuinely funny. A lot of them are ironically funny. A lot of them fall so flat. The scene where he turns into an actual like vampire bat is one of the oddest
moments. It reminded me of the Garbage Pail Kids movie.
Yeah, right?
Because of how like they get a little person and they put him in a bat costume.
Right.
But he's just sort of waddling.
Every time he waddles, he makes farting noises every time.
Yeah. It's on Netflix. It's streaming on Netflix right now, and you should look at it. Really,
I feel like it would be irresponsible of us, especially on a clean podcast like this one, to recommend watching a movie while high. But, and that's where I end that sentence.
Oh, the only thing a clean podcast means is that we cannot say swears.
Watch this movie high.
Yeah, get baked.
Get really baked. Rockula is perfect for that. It's good natured, so it won't like mess with your head.
Right.
But it's full of weirdness. It's full of bizarre music and dialogue.
Yeah.
All over like plot points. There's this weird plot point in Rockula that I would never. They've never explained, not once, in any medium, not any interview I've ever seen, anything. Which is Rockula has in the mirror another Rockula with a different personality.
Yes.
Who exists in a mirror universe.
Right.
That's not no other vampire has that?
No.
No one that's never explained why, how. You get the impression that he's sort of cursed and can only leave once he gets the girl, but why? Who did this?
Right.
And that Rockula's getting laid.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
He makes the other Rockula feel bad.
What does that mean?
He's always got some chick with him.
Yeah. Some people want to know, you know, is Elvis really alive? Who killed JFK? Who Jack the Ripper was? Wrote the Bible? I want to know what the hell is up with that mirror Dean Cameron.
Bizarro Dean Cameron. Rockula 2.
Yeah. Please! Please!
It's like Jackie Gleason in the last Smokey and the Bandit movie.
I didn't see that one.
Okay.
I'll see Rockula 100 times, and I probably have. I will not see the last Smokey and the Bandit movie. We all have to draw a line somewhere.
Let's talk about while we're still on the subject of not talking about the current cinema.
Yes.
Let's talk about Bresson.
Please.
Let's go for Rockula.
Now you've been attending a Robert Bresson.
It's over now.
But you have been for a while.
Yeah, it's over.
Because you were talking about it last week.
I've talked about it. This is now the third week in a row that I've talked about this Bresson retrospective.
So I risk
alienating our audience by continuing to push the Bresson agenda.
The Bresson agenda, which is flat.
We've just spent 15 minutes pushing the Rockula agenda.
You're going to sit through some Robert Bresson. My experience with Robert Bresson is much more limited than yours.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of his films in college. I saw Man Escaped
and
Lancelot du Lac.
Lancelot, great.
And since then, I've seen The Trial of Joan of Arc, and I feel like I've seen one more, but I'm blanking. Robert Bresson is very dry. He's a very good filmmaker, but he's very, very dry. And it's you know, you're at home, you get home, you just lay on your couch like, oh, I don't want to work anymore. I'm going to put on some Robert Bresson.
No,
never happens.
No.
Robert Bresson is work.
You need to be fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
When you see one of his films.
Yeah.
You need to not be sleepy.
Yeah. You need to pay attention.
You need to have some coffee or whatever other thing that you, not because his movies are boring,
no, but
because they require everything that you have in your mind to pay attention to them and to accumulate the details that he's laying out for you.
But it's he's not just throwing out detail. He's not like Baz Luhrmann, or that's a bad example. But but he's like you think of a lot of detail. You think of a lot of content. You think of a lot of production design. You think of a lot of plot.
Baz Luhrmann is is frippery. He's not detailed.
That was the worst example I could have possibly thought of. I'm trying to think who is a good like metaphor for Robert Bresson.
Frippery is an SAT word.
It is. It's a good one.
I just used it.
I liked it a lot. You think of something like maybe you think of something like LA Confidential, where if you go to the bathroom and come back, you've missed an important plot.
Right.
Robert Bresson is very straightforward.
He's the long game.
He is the long game.
And if you go to the bathroom, you'll be okay. you'll miss stuff, obviously. But I mean, here's the thing, and Alonzo and I have discussed this before. We talked about it last week. His thing was, and the word he often used was, he wanted to make films that were lucid.
Okay.
And to that end, he stripped,
translation pretentious,
stripped to the bone.
Yeah.
And
which is weird in the 60s when he made a lot of his films, because he'd clearly seen Breathless.
Yes.
He'd clearly seen what was going on in America at the time. It was very, for the time, it's daring to go in a totally different direction.
Totally different direction. He's not part of any movement.
Yeah.
And everything was incredibly spare and incredibly restrained. There's a word that I read some criticism of his about him recently, where they used the word astringent.
More SAT words.
And I'm super into that word to describe him.
Yeah.
Astringent. It is as though you have just stepped into a pool of rubbing alcohol. And that's what watching his movies are like.
What I find fascinating about Robert Bresson's movies is that they are, you know, there's almost a clinical detachment in a lot of them,
yes,
but it's always about, in my experience, it's always about people in intense emotional situations.
Yes.
But we're really pulling back in how we portray it.
Uh-huh.
And that dichotomy is really dangerous for a filmmaker, because on one hand, you're not making the audience feel something. You're so depending on the actors to convey it. And in the film that I think we both saw this week, Trial of Joan of Arc.
Yes.
That's an interesting one, because the situation that she's in, it's Joan of Arc. She's on trial. We all know how it ends.
Right.
That is in and of itself such a persecution that you can't help but be dragged into it, even though so much of the film is intensely straightforward.
Yeah.
Just constantly yes or no questions are over and over again. That's most of the film.
Yeah. It's a short film. It's 65 minutes.
Yeah.
And he, he frequently will take people in really intense situations, and then it's as though he drains all the blood from them.
Yeah.
And the woman who plays Joan of Arc in The Trial of Joan of Arc, which is
hot.
Is yes.
Okay. I've noticed this. You'll notice it too.
She's
very hot.
She looks
like Mary Martin, but with cuter hair.
She had a sort of Marlene Dietrich sort of face about her too, as well. I mean, there was a very sort of like,
I don't
like,
know if I saw that. I don't know if I saw that.
But
she reminded me.
She became a novelist.
Did she really?
A well-known French novelist. And I'm blanking on her name right now, I'll get that later. But no one in his films went on to be an actor, more or less. Yeah. There's like maybe one or two.
After you work with Robert Bresson, you never want to act again.
Well, he specifically chose non-actors.
Well, they could it's like in pornography where they claim it's everyone's first scene. Occasionally, you will see them again.
This is my first time.
Well, there's this one I was watching, and they said like they have a signed document saying, we have a legal document saying this is their first scene, and no one has ever proven us wrong.
Funny thing about this signed document, it was never notarized. So, the
best Robert Bresson conversation ever. But you were talking about her, yes.
Well, he used non-professional actors that he wouldn't even call them actors. He referred to them as models. And
a little degrading.
He would intentionally. That was his construct, that to strip film of theatrical language, to make performance just one more element of cinematography.
Okay.
And so
it just seems to me like that might be unfairly diminishing the role of the actor in that process.
But a lot of people didn't like him for that.
Yeah.
Pauline Kael did not like him at all.
Yeah. Who did Pauline Kael like?
I don't know if she liked anybody. But
there be a chance to read her review of West Side Story. It's just one of those hateful, wonderful reviews.
I have.
My favorite thing she's ever written.
So his approach was very much like he had his own world that he was making. And what's interesting about the trial of Joan of Arc is that people will compare it to other Joan of Arc films, but
and a lot of them have been very good.
To Theodore Dreyer's Carl Theodore Dreyer's The Passion of Joan of Arc,
which is stunning. Yeah,
and Bresson hated it.
Yeah,
because of Maria Falconetti, who's always like rolling her eyes back at her head.
Oh, it was a silent era.
No subtlety. But here are the words he used.
Okay.
Grotesque buffooneries of the actors. He said that the passion of Joan of Arc, the actors were guilty of grotesque buffooneries. He was hardcore.
That strikes me as a very judgmental thing for a filmmaker to say.
Yes.
Because everything in film evolves over time. What we consider naturalistic acting, cinematography, editing, all that stuff that we consider naturalistic now was insane.
Yeah.
Like 70 years ago, 50 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It evolves over time, and it's very difficult for me to even convince some people to see older movies, because all they see are grotesque buffooneries, even some of the greatest actors who ever lived.
Right.
They see these large, sweeping motions and movements and big, grand delivery of dialogue.
Yeah.
That's just the style, and if it's consistent, that's what you get used to.
Right.
And that strikes me as up yours, Robert Bresson.
Yeah.
What the hell, man? I'm going to make my own Joan of Arc movie. It's going to have sunflowers, and that's all I know about from the
you and I watched. Film. You and I watched a Joan of Arc movie Friday. We watched...
Yeah, we did.
We watched The Legend of Billie Jean. You have never seen The Legend of Billie Jean.
I have never seen The Legend of Billie Jean.
I promise we're going to get to the current films soon enough.
You just wait. Audience. I'd never seen Legend of Billie Jean. I had heard legends of the Legends of Billie Jean.
Right.
It had played at the Cine Family, and I think even the New Beverly since in my time since I've been here. It has a cult following.
Because it's great.
Because it is great.
Yeah.
And I would like to thank you, sir, for introducing me to the Legend of Billie Jean. It stars Helen Slater from Supergirl as Billie Jean. And she, you know, her brother, who is this most spectacularly gay Christian Slater I've ever seen, and that's saying something. He's got dyed blonde hair, so he looks like her brother.
I think he's more really just sort of almost prepubescent in a way,
but very, very unconfident in where his predilections lie. I would say
they had not dropped yet.
They most certainly not.
Yeah.
They most certainly not.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so they get in a fight with these bullies. The bullies jack up their scooter and...
His Honda Elite.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so Billie Jean goes to the guy's father who... Was that Stacey Keach?
No.
Looked like Stacey Keach.
It was some other dude. I know. I've seen
him. Dude who looks like Stacey Keach.
In other things.
He's the Stacey Keach.
That's his name on IMDb.
Can't get Stacey Keach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so she's like, hey, listen, you owe me this money for my scooter.
Budget Stacey Keach.
Yeah, okay. Budget. You owe me this money for my scooter, and he tries to rape her, basically.
He tries to rape her.
Yeah. And then
tells her he'll pay her for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In installments. You let me rape you. Like multiple, 20 times.
Multiple times.
Then I'll pay for your
scooter. A few bucks
each
time.
I got to tell you, you know, again, speaking in terms of like cultural differences, again, 100 years ago, very reasonable. I'm a monster. So he's a monster. They end up accidentally shooting him, and then they're on the run, and it becomes this beautiful, beautiful over-the-top parable, this us versus them parable.
Oh, it's so good.
Of youth. At first you think it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like a financial thing. Like they live in a trailer park.
Right.
And he's a reasonably well-to-do businessman.
Right.
And then you realize it's all about us versus them in terms of kids. Kids are rebelling. And the adults won't want to let them. And all the kids start rising up and cutting their hair to look like Billie Jean. And we just don't have...
This is about justice.
Yeah.
Yeah. This isn't mindless teen rebellion.
This isn't mindless teen rebellion, but it is very straightforward teen rebellion. And it's the sort of thing that I've noticed that we don't have too much in teen movies anymore. Teens are very wrapped up in their emotions, at least on film.
Yeah.
But there isn't a lot of to hell with my parents sentiment.
Right.
And we used to get that a lot in the
80s. Right.
We have that in Footloose. Mm-hmm. We got that in a lot of the John Hughes films. Yep. Not all. John Hughes is actually fairly sentimental. Because he knew that parents were once teen. I think of Harry Dean Stanton and Pretty in Pink.
There were sympathetic adults.
There were sympathetic adults. Breakfast Club was one.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, Rad or any of these, the adults were just the bad guy.
Yeah.
You know? And here, it's never been more simple about it. Like, screw adult. Like, even the one cool adult, Peter Coyote, is an insane screw up.
And yeah,
every single thing that goes wrong in this movie is his fault.
Yeah.
I love that. I also love Helen Slater's really, really tiny tank top that she wears at the beginning of the film, which is like cut like, and she's not a very well endowed woman, which is how I like him. And it's cut up to like the third rib.
It's
like you're just not seeing, not seeing under boob, it is beautiful, and it's a little loose.
It is the micro mini of cutoff t-shirts.
Oh, I need a second.
When she stopped wearing that shirt, I'll just tell
you. The movie ended. The movie ended for me.
Yeah. When she stopped wearing that shirt, each subsequent scene would come along, and she'd be wearing a different shirt. Mm-hmm. And William Bibbiani of CraveOnline.com would say, "I miss you, shirt." That's what would happen while we watched this movie.
It's true.
You're right about that shirt.
It's a great shirt. I wish that would come back. Leah Thompson wore a very similar shirt in Howard the Duck when she almost raped Howard.
I am pro.
Also, one of the sexiest scenes I've ever seen in my life, and I'm not kidding.
I am pro more flesh.
I am pro more flesh, but not necessarily all flesh.
Yeah, everybody.
I'd be fine if everyone was naked, don't get me wrong, but there is something to be said for, and just in terms of erotica, in terms of just the basic principle of it, of holding something back.
That's what I mean.
But revealing more than you'd expect.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so jeans and a t-shirt can be hot.
Yeah.
Jeans and a t-shirt, but the t-shirt is like cut off of it and you see some of the midriff, hotter. But it is an uncanny valley effect. At some point, you just simply go to, and now they're naked, and that's hot too, but it requires a little bit less imagination. Just a little bit of imagination.
The moment before full nakedity.
Yes. Is perhaps the zenith.
And that is what her shirt is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has the zenith of t-shirts. She has the Plato's cave of sexy shirts. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct.
I can hold my own. I'm a film critic.
So
I can reference with the best of them.
Anyway, what's great about this movie in the middle is that it becomes a proto-Riot Girl film where she watches Saint Joan, starring Gene Seberg.
Right. And what I love about it is they have to explain who Joan of Arc is.
Well, yeah.
Like, and I understand that, like, okay, someone might not know.
Right.
That's pretty big. That's like... Oh, what are you reading? I'm reading the Bible. Oh, what's that? There's at some point where
I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. At some point, unless it's like an alien or something, but at some point, there's a certain baseline of information we're all supposed to know. And I would have thought by now, most people would have at least gotten the gist of Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
Joan of Arc, God talked to her. She kicked some ass, then was killed because people said that she was really talking to the devil.
Yeah.
That's all you really need to know to get through the trial of Billie Jean.
Yeah.
The trial of Billie Jean. The legend of Billie Jean.
The passion of Billie Jean.
Oh, my God. Why isn't someone making a porn parody of that? I miss the 80s so bad. I saw a woman in shoulder pads the other day, and I swear to God, my pants got tighter. Like, really tight. It was beautiful. I miss shoulder pads and big hair. Is that so wrong? It's okay to say yes. It's okay to say yes.
I don't think it's wrong.
Good.
No, it's not wrong.
Okay. It is inaccurate. It's unreasonable.
Whatever makes you happy is not wrong.
I'll tell that to my girlfriend.
Unless it's, more shoulder pads.
Yes!
William Bibbiani's girlfriend.
My girlfriend got like a shirt once and it came with like some shoulder pads and she's like, "I'm going to tear these off." And I'm like, "No!" Why? And that's the day I died inside.
Yeah. The Joan of Arc thing happens,
yeah.
And she shaves her head and she becomes an outlaw martyr teen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a very exciting film.
It is, because it's very full of incidents.
Because there feels like there's so much at stake.
Yeah.
You know, the urgency of being young and having only one thing that you have to think about.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. It's the us versus them thing. Yeah. And that's why it's one of the most beautiful ones of those, is because it's very clear.
Yeah.
It's not like, oh, well, we're going to show our parents by winning this dance competition. It's, no, we're going to show our parents by being outlaws. And it just makes everything beautiful. Very simple.
Righteous outlaws. Yeah.
Arguably a little trite, but very clear and very dramatic. And it's hard not to get swept up in it, even if you are occasionally laughing at the silliness of parts of it. Like Keith Gordon shows up and he has a water slide leading out of his bedroom window into the pool.
So lucky.
Which is the coolest thing ever. And he says his father doesn't love him. And you made a point out, he got you a water slide outside your window. Your daughter loves you more than anything else.
Yeah.
Seriously.
It goes from your bedroom window on the second floor down to your swimming pool in your backyard. A, you have a swimming pool in your backyard.
Yeah.
B, you have a big house with a second floor.
Yeah.
C, you have a slide that goes from the window to the pool.
By the way, I would never...
Your parents love you.
I would never use the door on that... I would enter through the door, but I would never exit through the door. That's what the water slide is for.
Right.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So watch that movie.
Yeah.
It's, again, as I've said before, without The Legend of Billie Jean and Ladies and Gentlemen, The Fabulous Stains, mm-hmm. Bikini Kill would have never been a band. There would have been no Riot Girl. There would have been no Riot Girl without those two movies.
Yep.
And so, so this is important for you to know about. All right. We're going to move on.
Yes.
We're going to go to the films that are currently in release.
How many minutes have we been doing this so far? 35.
We'll go fast.
Okay.
Mission Impossible. No.
Okay.
Men in Black 3.
I called in my review of Men in Black 3.
You didn't like it.
I did not like it. It's not that I hated it.
Okay.
It's not that I hated it.
Yes.
It's certainly, there are parts of it that are very funny.
Yes.
All the actors did a good job in it.
Yes.
But I call it in my review at graveonline.com, the cinematic equivalent of staying at home and watching TV. There is no reason to see this film.
Yes, correct.
There's no reason for this film to exist being mildly entertaining and making money.
Yeah.
This movie is about, at its heart,
mm-hmm.
The most trivial thing I can possibly consider. Okay, so the original Men in Black, it's about finding that there's a world underneath your own that's full of aliens or whatever, and it's about responding to that. Fine. Second one was about advertising. That's what the second one was about. It was about selling you products.
A signed contract.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And the third one is about why Tommy Lee Jones isn't very chatty. That's what the plot boils down to.
Why you got to be so boring, Tommy Lee Jones?
That's literally...
Let's make a film investigating this issue.
Nothing in the film moves the concept or the characters forward.
No.
Nothing. This is completely spinning your wheels. And as a result... there's a plot about going back in time and preventing the world from being stopped, but it's all very token. Men in Black has never been about that plot. It's always been about character interaction. It's always been about kind of wry, droll humor.
Yes.
And all that's there, but there's no reason to give a crap.
Right.
I couldn't get invested. I could not get invested. And, you know, I saw it a little under a week ago. I've already forgotten a lot of it.
Right.
Because I'm watching, I'm like, okay, I'm mildly amused. I could have stayed home and watched The Daily Show.
End.
Yeah, there's no, you might not regret, like, oh, I was entertained. I guarantee you 6 months from now, you'll barely remember a thing about this film.
6 hours
from now. I'm assuming that there are huge diehard Men in Black fans in your listenership.
Yeah.
And even
they
will forget. Well,
we'd like to hear from you.
We would love to hear from you.
Oh, gosh, what is our email address?
Well, I don't know.
Alonzo always says these things, and I always forget. It doesn't matter.
Go to the website and email us if you're a Men in Black fan and explain why. And here's the thing. I think Men in Black is uniquely ill-suited to be a blockbuster franchise.
Yeah.
Because, well, first off, all the characters are really insular. They can never really break out and, like, grow too much.
Mm-hmm.
But more than that, the entire premise, the entire joke behind Men in Black is that it takes all these big, crazy, sci-fi, action-y conceits
mm-hmm.
and treats them like they're nothing.
Right.
And you just can't escalate that. Oh, no, the action's bigger. Well, we still don't give a crap.
Right.
That's not... a franchise.
Right.
It was a fun TV series. They turned into a fun TV series.
I never saw the show.
It was very, it was really well animated, very well written, especially for a kid's show at the time.
Right.
And as a TV series, you can make that work for like 20 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the movie I think of, and it's a movie I actually rather enjoy, is the Ralph Fiennes Uma Thurman Avengers. Which is, it's stupid. I take some pleasure in it, but the entire point is...
I like the part where they dress up like teddy bears.
That's the best part. It's the best part. Sean Connery in a giant pastel teddy bear suit. That's beautiful. But my point is that the entire basic premise of that is that they treat every single thing that happens to him like it was nothing.
Right.
And it's hard to get invested in that. And Men in Black gets away with it because Tommy Lee Jones and Will Smith have a great dynamic. But it's never moved forward. It's never done anything different. And it never feels important after the first one.
Right.
So I don't know why this... I can't support this, even though I can't say that it was made badly.
Right. Here's what's strange about it. Everything you say is true.
Always.
About this film.
Yeah. Thank you.
Having said that, mm-hmm. For the 100 minutes or whatever... I was happy to be watching it.
Sure.
And I had a good time, and I laughed, yeah. and I thought Josh Brolin was terrific.
Oh, he's fantastic.
He's terrific.
Oh, I do not want anything I say to take away from Josh Brolin. Yeah. He's wonderful in this movie.
I was having a really great time with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the fact that Tommy Lee Jones is barely in the film,
yeah.
and the fact that Will Smith is kind of just phoning in the Will Smithisms,
yeah, he's,
in this
yeah.
movie.
His Will Smithiness is rather
everything
high.
That happens around these guys made me pretty happy,
mm-hmm.
and it looked cool. And I say this specifically because I was paying extra attention to it because one of my friends was the co-supervisor of visual effects,
and okay. so full disclosure,
which is. And even if he weren't, I would still think it looked cool. The monsters were cool. The yeah, aliens were
the
cool.
The production design, everything was really nice.
Everything yeah. that's supposed to, everything that's fake looked pretty real. And, yeah. and I was happy about that. But
yeah.
it has now been 5 or 6 days
yeah.
since seeing it. And there's nothing memorable about it.
Nothing.
There's no memorable line. There's kind of a sweet thing that happens at the end, which is sort of drippy and dopey and sappy, and
yeah, it's a bit of a twist,
very
not,
very
kind
a
of,
corny twist that
yeah.
that I still found sort of.
I was
sweet.
Without ruining it, I was iffy on it when I first saw it. But the more yeah. I think about it, the more I think, okay, that actually kind of works. There might be some plot holes involved in that, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's cute. Here's my thing: Men in Black 3, like many a film. Is entertaining to watch while you're watching it.
Yeah.
For me, that's not quite enough because no matter how many times you see a movie, you're going to spend most of your life not seeing that movie.
Yes.
And all that really matters is what you remember.
Yes.
And if you can't remember it, that's not a good movie.
Right.
So while there are worse ways to spend your time, infinitely worse,
right.
I just can't give this one a thumbs up, but there's a lot of people did really great work in it.
Yeah.
And if you just really are into any of the actors, if
yeah.
you're really into Men in Black franchise, this is okay.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very mild not recommendation.
Right.
I can't legally say thumbs down. but we always want to do that, don't we? We always want to do that Roman Emperor.
I've never been a thumbs up, thumbs down person.
Yeah.
In fact, I've always actively sort of grumped about the idea that I have to make a rating out of a letter.
I always do too.
A letter or a star.
Too.
People
yeah.
people will get on me. The first thing people will say to me when they don't like something I did mm-hmm. in a review will say, 3.5 stars for that.
Oh, I know.
And I'm like, okay, tell me one sentence that I wrote.
Yeah. Here's what I
instead of laying out stars at me.
Yeah.
Tell me a single sentence that I wrote
yeah.
about this movie.
You looked at the page,
you go,
saw the star
you go
rating.
Read. I yeah. spent a couple hours writing this thing.
Yeah.
You go read it, and then we'll have a conversation about it.
Yeah.
Because everything that you say in a review cannot be distilled into that letter grade. You know, you have to. It's a cumulative thing where you,
mm-hmm.
where you, you know, I just wish they didn't exist.
Here, I've actually discovered that there is one small value in having a letter grade, which I always pick rather arbitrarily.
Yeah.
You know, I look at my review, I think about the movie, it's like, okay, what is it on this, because we don't scale a 1 to 10.
Yeah.
At Crave Online. It's like, okay, that's, Screw it, I'll give it a 7.5. That was pretty good.
Right.
All right? That's about as serious as I take it. I might look at some of the things I reviewed very recently to say, like, okay, I gave Moonrise Kingdom this, but I also give this that. So I'll give Moonrise Kingdom a little higher to make it clear if you've been reading the last couple of reviews.
Yeah.
Bam. But that's, I do not.
You just put more thought into it than anyone reading.
Here is what I have to say. The one value I have to star ratings or anything like that is if you put in a star rating that it's a 3-star movie, people will tell that it's a recommendation.
Yes.
Then you can spend your entire review focusing on if there's something that's like kept it from being 4 stars that frustrated the hell out of you.
Right.
I can focus on the negative, but at the same time come around and say, this is overwhelmingly I did this with my Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol review, which I thought was a fun film, but a lot of people were saying it's one of the best action films ever, and I'm watching it.
Of
I'm
all
like,
time.
Yeah.
When someone say, you the one that was telling me?
Someone on my site who is a friend of mine, whatever, I disagree with him a lot, was really talking the hell out of it. I had to do a second opinion. I was like, look, it's pretty good. There's really cool action in it, whatever, but there are these fundamentally really frustrating, horrible problems between the characters and their antagonists that keep it from being really interesting or just really great. And so I was able to write a mostly negative review, but in the end say, 7.5, that's a recommendation. Yeah. What do you want from me?
Yeah.
So it's that. It's basically, it takes away like an extra paragraph of having to apologize for my negative review or my positive review or whatever. So it has that value. At the same time, it's arbitrary, it's stupid, and I wish people would read more, but they don't.
No, they don't.
They don't. What else are we reviewing this week?
I even tell my friends that I'm like, you don't have to go read it. You just have to click on it.
Yeah.
Because
that's what we tell people about subscribing to the B-Movies podcast.
You don't have to click.
You don't have to listen to it. Just subscribe.
Click. Yeah.
We need you to subscribe if we want to stay on the air.
Right.
All right, if you don't listen to it every week, please subscribe.
Right.
What else we got?
Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom is great.
It's so great.
Is it? I haven't seen Darjeeling Limited. I'm a little ashamed of that.
I see.
But is it Wes Anderson's best film? Some people have been saying it is.
Okay, I'll say it like this.
Okay,
Sonic Youth is my favorite band,
mm-hmm.
and they have been my favorite band since I saw them live for the very first time.
Back when you were a Sonic Youth
in 1986. So I'm real old.
Yeah,
and.
Back when you were Sonic Middle-aged.
When I was a Sonic Youth.
Okay.
Now I'm Sonic Middle-aged. I don't have a good gauge for judging them. Like, when people say, oh, this album is better than this album, and this album is better than this album.
They're one of your favorites.
I just think, every album is so great because it's Sonic Youth and I love them.
Okay.
And so I understand, and while I'm willing to say, yes, obviously, Daydream Nation is the greatest of their albums, because we all agree that Daydream Nation is the greatest of their albums.
I'm not a music person, and that's the
one they toured with recently to perform the entire album from start to finish, etc.
Very cool.
I like the other records by them just as much as I like Daydream Nation. And so, people don't like The Life Aquatic. People don't like Darjeeling Limited. I like them both. And while I can say, they're probably not as good as Moonrise Kingdom or Rushmore or Tenenbaums.
My favorite is Fantastic Mr. Fox,
which takes what Wes Anderson would love to do to its logical conclusion.
Yes.
Because his people, much like Bresson, his people are just meat puppets in his films.
I disagree.
And I'm not saying this negatively.
I disagree with your assessment.
What I mean by that is that they all are part of his world, and every character in every film could exist in the same universe. Like every film he's made could have been made in the same world,
pretty much,
and the same and those people could conceivably cross paths.
Yes,
and so,
oh my God, Wes Anderson setting us up for his own Avengers.
Yeah,
that's gonna be awesome.
Like, I think
it's gonna be so cool.
Fantastic Mr. Fox could exist in Moonrise Kingdom. Like, he could have just walked in.
Yeah, you could just cut to like their feet and you see like the submarine Fox is walking around.
They're out in the wilderness.
You would have totally believed it.
And here's Fantastic Mr. Fox.
I would have totally believed it.
Underneath. Yeah.
Would have totally believed it.
And so that's what I mean by they are just all part of his world.
I agree that they're all part of what I love about them, and I want to I want to say this right now, and this is why I think he does love his characters individually. Mm-hmm. His characters, and I only just really focused on this with Moonrise Kingdom, are all high functioning obsessive compulsives.
Yes,
they are all really they are really obsessed. They know who they are. They know what they want. They know their passions. They have their own costume.
They've got a
all
mission.
Very consistent.
Yeah,
they know exactly who they are, and it's hard not to admire that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard not to get behind them because they don't screw around.
Right.
They never refuse the call. I've talked about this on my podcast as well. They just do.
Yeah.
And there's this that's direct and it's powerful and it's you want to root for them no matter what silly thing they're excited about.
Yeah.
And that is infectious, and I think that's in almost all of his films. That's one of the reasons why I don't like Life Aquatic so much, mm-hmm. is because I feel that that film finds a melancholy in that behavior, whereas something like Moonrise Kingdom or Fantastic Mr. Fox or Bottle Rocket find heroism in that behavior.
Even and in the and when his characters are actively failing,
mm-hmm.
like in Tenenbaums, where the entire family is sort of in decline.
It's because they lost their way.
It's because they lost their way, and because and he finds he for him that's the saddest thing that you can do.
Yeah,
like the saddest thing that can happen to you is that you've lost your way.
Yeah,
and so everyone in Tenenbaums, for the most part, is a figure to be sort of protected and loved because they've. Not, they forgot how to be awesome.
They forgot how to be awesome. They got distracted by life, by love, by loss, and they've lost themselves in the process. They haven't lost no matter who died or whatever.
Right.
The important thing is that they lost themselves.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. It's a wonderful film.
We
are both white, by the way. I want to make that 100% clear.
It doesn't matter what I love about his movies, and this one in particular, which is about a kid. Who
runs away from summer
camp. He runs away from summer camp, from scouting camp.
Yeah.
And he picks a local girl. Mm. And when he picks a girl, he picks a girl.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there's...
No
like,
futzing around.
Yeah,
like,
he's... My favorite... This is in the trailer. And it's basically my favorite moment in the movie.
Mm.
When he meets her for the first time. And he walks in on her, and this, like I said, this is a key moment even in the film trailer. That's how they knew it was a moment that they would have to put in the thing. He looks at her. She and a row of girls are all wearing bird costumes.
Because they're backstage at a play.
Because they're backstage at a school, at a church, a local church play. And he says, "Which bird are you?" And another girl talks. She says, "Well, I'm this bird, and this other girl is this other bird." And he goes, "No, I said... Which bird are you? And he doesn't use his hands.
I wish I could be that confident.
Doesn't point out, doesn't explain who he's talking to. He fixes his eyes on her.
Yeah.
And so she knows she's being looked at and only being looked at.
And beautiful.
This kid is 11.
I've never been that confident with a woman in my life.
Yeah. And he's so cool.
Yeah.
That he's, and she responds immediately. She's like, "I'm a raven."
Hell yeah, you're a raven.
"You can have me."
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. Everyone in this, and whether it's Ed Norton, he's just a dedicated, he knows that he's this Boy Scout troop master.
Yeah.
And that's his passion. That's what he cares about. Or anyone in this film, they just have this confidence about themselves that you look at them and you see you, but you see an idealized version of you or whatever your obsession is,
mm-hmm.
whatever you care about, whether it's movies or model airplanes or politics, whatever.
Yeah.
Tilda Swinton has a great character whose name is Social Services.
God.
That's what she is. That's her passion. She's a social services.
Yeah.
And that's who she is, and that defines her. And there's a nobility in that.
Yeah.
And it's, it's arch. It's I don't even say it's melodramatic. It's certainly very theatrical.
Yeah.
So many of Wes Anderson's films feel like a Max Fisher play, but those are infectious. And Moonrise Kingdom is one of his very best. It's full of wonderful characters. The filmmaking is wonderful. There's a lot of great suspense in it because they really play up the whole he's a fugitive from Boy Scout summer camp.
Yeah.
All the other kids run after him with deadly weapons because how dare you run away from camp?
Right.
And like there's a hurricane that's coming, and they know it's coming because Bob Balaban, the narrator, tells you.
Yeah.
So it's full of great suspense, and it's also full of wonderful, just wonder the relationship between the two young lovers, who may or may not actually be lovers, which is actually curiously sexual for a Wes Anderson film.
especially to show it with kids that age.
Which is it, because they clearly they understand that this is not. They understand what romance is, but they don't understand maybe the nuts and bolts of it.
Right.
I don't know if they actually know what sex is, but they know that it involves being in your underwear and laying down together.
Yeah.
So it's on one hand, it's momentarily off-putting, but there's an innocence to it and a purity to it.
You never think of it as being like inappropriate or
No, like never. It's just young and it's a little experimental and it's just people who are growing up and you're seeing it in front of you and it is beautiful and it's relatable and it's impossible not to feel something.
Yeah.
I think it's impossible not to feel something in this movie. And I think ranking them is a little arbitrary. Mm. I think this is one of his very best. I think this is really one of his very best films.
I definitely agree. Yeah. I never felt his films have been arch. I've always thought of him as being very much like his characters.
Yes.
He's so enthusiastic about so much stuff that I described him as a very generous hoarder who has accumulated a lifetime of like visual references that he's in love with, literary things he's in love with, aesthetic stuff, film references he's in love with.
Yeah.
And he wants you to see the world the way he sees it based on all his stuff. He wants you
to show it all to you. Any great artist is wanting to show you the world through their eyes.
And he takes it all, he can synthesize it into something that is uniquely his.
Yeah.
Nobody's movies look like his, like his, feel like his.
No.
You don't have to like the stylistic choices that he makes. And I think that's where a lot of people trip up with him.
Yeah.
Is that they don't respond to the things that he's super in love with. And so and consequently they'll be like, well, it's so precious, or it's so this, or it's so that.
Hipster.
And and
that's unfair.
Too bad.
He's not making a mainstream film. He makes films that have arguably a mainstream appeal because they're very funny and have really good casts that are full of people you might like.
Right.
But he's not making a Men in Black movie. He's making an art film that has crossover appeal, I hope.
Yeah.
We're seeing the world through Wes Anderson's eyes, and I'm glad for it. I'm always happy to do that.
I will see it again.
Oh, yeah. I'm buying this one.
Yeah,
You have to vote with your money.
Yeah,
you have to vote with your money. You know, especially as film critics, I think, you know, because we get to see a lot of movies.
We vote by keeping the stuff that gets sent to the house.
Yeah, that's true. I'm gonna hang on to my John Carter Blu-ray.
One of the little perks of this job is you get a lot of movies in the mail.
Yeah, you know the thing is, you know, because Kevin Smith has that show he's gonna be doing now. Where he's gonna,
and it's
like,
gonna be called
what was it?
It's gonna be called. I know my friend Malcolm.
Yeah.
is going to be his movie goon.
Ah, yes, his stand-in for the internet.
Yeah,
yeah. But one of the things he always talks about is he's mad that critics get to see movies for free, and. He said this on multiple occasions. Like, you guys get to see movies for free, and somehow your opinion matters. And I actually
not why my opinion matters.
No, it's not. But it's like the idea is that it shouldn't matter because we didn't pay for it.
I don't get that.
I kind of see what you're getting at. Is like, it feels like you're not playing fair, but you have to. It's like getting mad at a gynecologist for seeing a bunch of naked ladies. You know? It's part of this job that we have.
Right.
And, you know, they don't have to send us to anything.
Right.
If they offer us a screening, we go.
Right.
If they dummy, you didn't get to see Chernobyl Diaries early, did you?
Well, they did screen it.
Yeah, but you missed it. And you paid for it.
I did pay for it.
Yeah, if we don't get to see it, we pay for it.
Well, yeah,
That's it. If they offer us a screening, it gives us time to get a review out in advance, and we're going to go. And that's on the studios. It's on the marketing people.
Yeah. We are, in a way, we are part of the marketing. Saying that's awesome. I'm saying that's just a thing that is. Mm-hmm. If we were not part of the marketing, they wouldn't show us the films.
That's true.
First,
they see us as word of mouth. But how I see us, and this is how I feel like, in at least on a practical side, with the value of film criticism now, because a lot of people are saying, you know, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right.
Here's what it is. I feel like we are.
It doesn't mean anything if you're stupid.
It doesn't. But here's if nothing else. almost everything you hear about a movie before it comes out comes straight from marketing.
Yeah.
It comes straight from people who are trying to sell you the movie. One of the very last things marketing does, and I appreciate them for us,
yeah,
is they send hopefully non-partial observers to it, and we're the last line of defense.
Right.
Everyone's been telling you that this movie is awesome for the last 3 months. Now, I've actually seen it, and I'm under no obligation to tell you anything otherwise, and they're playing it up too much. This sucks. That's
Anna Faris is What's Your Number is the funniest film of 2011.
Oh, Christ.
And so, yeah, you're right. We are the people who finally who stepped in at the last minute and said, I'm sorry to report, it is not the funniest film of 2011.
Yeah, so it is actually kind of a miracle.
It is, in fact, one of the worst films.
It's a miracle marketing even runs anything past us at all.
Yeah.
And there will be a day, I imagine, someday, when they stop bothering.
But I would like then, to, yeah, they probably will.
But until eventually. Then, you know.
I would like to hear, Smith's full argument about why critics should not
see things. I always hear sound bites. I would like to see a really long.
Because I don't. Because
he's an intelligent man.
I'm not going to respond to it because I don't get it.
Yeah.
And, because my response wouldn't matter anyway.
Yeah.
Because I'm nobody.
And we Dave White is challenging Kevin Smith.
No, right now. No, he's not.
To a debate.
No, I am not. I am not.
Fine, I will.
I like Kevin Smith.
I love him. I actually like most of his movies. I've only not like one of his movies.
I've met him, and he was a really good dude. And so, I'm a fan of his films. And so,
yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Clerks 2. The only film of his I think I actively disliked was Cop Out.
I completely loved Clerks 2.
I like so much of Clerks 2. It's just I feel like there's a really bunch of dry patches in the middle that aren't as fun.
I watched the ABC dance number on YouTube.
That's a great bit.
With some regularity.
Yeah. For me, the one I feel like Zach and Miri is really underrated. I think that's a really sweet and in many ways quietly progressive film.
Yeah.
You know, I really, really, it has some problems too, but it's funny. I like all the characters. Mm-hmm. I think that it might actually be my favorite one of his movies, and it's one of his most recent ones that he gets a lot of crap for.
Alonzo is super into the director's cut of Jersey Girl.
I never saw the director's cut, but I actually thought Jersey Girl was underrated, too.
The director's cut has screened here a couple times.
Huh.
And apparently it's like 40 minutes longer or something.
Wow.
Yeah, but Alonzo keeps telling me, I'm going to take you. When they do it again, I'm going to take you because you won't believe how great it is until you see the full thing.
Yeah.
And so, how do we get off on this?
I don't know.
Chernobyl Diaries.
Oh, God, we haven't talked about Chernobyl Diaries. Sorry. Is that the last thing we're talking about?
Yeah, sure, because okay, I'd like to. You didn't see Oslo August 31st, did you? Okay, I'll talk about that with Alonzo.
Okay. I didn't see Chernobyl Diaries either.
Oh, you didn't?
No. Give us a gist of it.
It sucks. The end.
Okay, good. Fair enough.
Well, you know.
Sorry.
Chernobyl happened.
I want to see that on a shirt. Chernobyl happens. It's in Russian. No one gets it.
And the radiation made everyone had to go away.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because of the Transformers that were there, as we learned in Transformers 3.
Except for the zombies. The zombies got to stay.
Good.
Because the radiation doesn't bother them.
Housing values crashed.
The radioactive bears got to stay.
Really?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Is
this a movie about radioactive bears?
No. But there is a radioactive bear in the film.
Does his eyes glow and it breathes fire?
They didn't make good use of him.
Oh, man.
Because when you say the word radioactive bears.
That's a Sci-Fi Channel original movie.
Yeah.
That's just the whole movie.
Yeah.
I once tried to write a spec for a Sci-Fi Channel movie, and I called it, it was about killer polar bears, and I called it Dipolar. Which I still think is funny, but I digress. Go on.
I do think that's funny.
Okay.
About a year ago, I watched a special on a National Geographic called Radioactive Wolves.
Oh, wolves. Oh, because those are real.
Yeah.
Okay.
And those are a real thing.
Okay.
The nature has taken Chernobyl over.
Okay.
Like, there's post-life there, and it's all wildlife.
Okay.
And the scientists go in wearing special suits, and they measure the radiation of the wolves, and they see how the wolf population is faring. And totally interesting. You know, special that I watched.
Yeah, sounds fascinating.
So there are the radioactive wolves are in this movie.
Like you do.
Their job, however, is to eat college kids.
That's their job.
Yeah.
Punching in.
They, Like that old cartoon.
Yeah, right. the foxes and the heads. Yeah.
No.
It was a sheep. It was a sheep.
It's them and the zombies.
Yeah.
And the useless radioactive bear who all he can do is run.
That's all the bear can do? That's five, a wasted bear.
Five or six or nine, I don't remember how many, college kids go on. They take a day trip to Chernobyl.
Like you
with
do.
A tour guide who specializes in extreme tourism.
Like you do.
And then they die one by one. Like it's a haunted house and the zombies come and the blah, blah, and the,
we shouldn't have gone to the, basically anytime someone says, let's check it out. The van broke
down and
let's check it out. We all die.
Stay here. Yeah. I'll be right back.
Yeah. Well, now what you were telling, was it you who were telling about this? I was hearing that it starts off as sort of a found footage film.
No.
But then I heard like initially like the very first couple of shots are with someone's camera. And then, like, after that, they keep filming it that way, but it's no longer found footage?
No.
No? Okay, no. I heard wrong. Tell me,
There is found footage.
This is from Oren Peli, so everyone expects Paranormal Activity.
There is found footage incorporated into the movie.
Okay.
But only in very small bits.
So he's growing up. If you could see Dave's face right now.
I just want to make it clear. Look. I like
it would make a puppy cry.
I'm a big fan of the Paranormal Activity movies.
I didn't see the other ones. I like the first one quite a bit.
The second one's kind of boring and one note, samey.
Mm-hmm.
Third one's pretty rad.
Yeah. I like the first one because I feel like a lot of the great horror movies are about judging people way too harshly for small crimes.
Yeah.
You know, like The Hitcher, don't pick up hitchhikers, here's what happens to you. Yeah. Paranormal Activity is what happens when the husband won't call the plumber when there's a leaky sink.
Yes.
And then the house floods.
Right.
That's basically, if he had just called that paranormal investigator first thing, there would be no movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This movie is just not, I mean, like, I think he had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what if people went to Chernobyl and there were zombies there?
Cool.
Now go make that movie and I will be the executive producer. Like, that's...
Yeah, you know what? We laugh, but I would kill to have that much power.
That's what happened.
To just come up with an idea and just say, you know, midgets go off on a heist and there are vampires. Go.
Right.
Which I would love to see that film.
That's what it feels like happened here, and it's I was completely bored.
Sounds it.
I love horror films.
So do I.
I
every good film critic loves horror films.
They don't need to push things forward. Every single new horror movie doesn't need to advance the genre.
Sure.
Doesn't need to break the rules or make a new statement
horror,
or do it.
Horror is a genre. I equate horror movies a lot of the time to romantic comedies.
Yeah.
We go into them wanting something very specific and just wanting it slightly different way every time. Yeah. All we ask is that you do something slightly different. If you do something really different, awesome. But we want the basic gist of it, couple of twists,
we're happy. You must surprise me at least once or twice.
At least once or twice.
And this is not that
at
all on any level. And
oddly, thought this would be like some sort of summer blockbuster coming out in this late May. Like, what are you counter programming? Like, no one's going to want to see Avengers or Men in Black. But you're good at Chernobyl Diaries. Yeah, that's where it's at.
Fooey on the Avengers and that Men in Black. Come to our movie, kids. Guess who it stars? Nobody you've ever heard of.
I've often had this fantasy.
Except for that kid that had the hit single that one time. Jesse McCartney. I can't tell you what that single was.
Neither could I.
But he was a teen idol for like that much amount of space.
I've often had a fantasy in my head. Because, like, you know, like, they always put quotes on posters. You know? About like, two thumbs up.
Uh-huh.
Best movie of the summer.
Uh-huh.
Coolest thing ever. Whatever. I would love it if that had to be a fair sampling of every review.
Yeah.
Like, if it was people are 50-50 on it, you had to put some bad ones on there, too. And I feel like Fooey on the Avengers would be a great one to put on the poster for that film. Like, that's like the most negative thing I've ever heard anyone really say about it. Fooey on the Avengers.
If I got to have a blurb for this movie on a poster, it would say, I'm rooting for the radioactive wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've thought a lot about, like, how can we replace the star system, the rating system, the letter grade, whatever, on films. And I've thought about this for a while, and I saw someone do it once, and I think it was a joke. But basically, you take whatever quote you wish they'd put on the poster and just Photoshop it onto the poster.
Right.
And that's it. Yeah. Visual, so you can glance over it really quick.
Right.
And it just says, look, if I could distill it down to one sentence in my review, that one.
Uh-huh.
That one right there.
Exactly.
I think it'd be fun.
Sorry, didn't mean to yawn there.
No, I'm really boring.
I'm not tired.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not boring. I'm a little sleepy.
Okay. The only thing, I saw Intouchables. I don't know if you guys have any plans to see that.
I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
Movies.com makes me go see the big films.
Yeah.
And then I get to pick.
If you want to see one of the small ones.
If I want to see one of the small ones.
Yeah.
And what I do is I go with whatever, like, the big, you know, indie in quotes arm of the studio is putting out. Fox Searchlight.
Sure.
Paramount Vantage. Sony Pictures Classics.
Got it.
Most of that stuff, 99% of that stuff, I will go and I will review that.
Okay.
And then there are films like The Intouchables.
Yeah.
Where all I have to be told is what it's about.
Yeah.
And my wall goes right up.
Yeah.
Because if I never see another film like this again, it will be too soon.
I went into it. One of the things I like about seeing, I like to see as many indie movies as I can.
And I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
I just don't want to see it.
I saw this movie and
tell people.
What I like about, I went into this movie not knowing what it was about.
Yeah.
I just, whenever I can, especially with an indie film and I can avoid it, I like just being able to go in fresh.
Uh-huh.
So I went to see The Intouchables, and Intouchables
with
is
with
an I. So it's, and it's French, so it should be intouchable, as we joked on my own podcast. It's about François Cluzet from Tell No One, very talented actor.
Yes.
He plays a quadriplegic who needs a new caretaker.
Yes.
But all of the caretakers, all the professional caretakers, they sound like they pity him, right?
Right.
So he's insulted. And this guy comes in. He's played by, I feel like I'm pronouncing his name wrong. His name is Omar Sy, the actor. He's from Micmacs.
Yeah.
Which is one of my very favorite movies.
Yeah.
From the last couple of years.
Uh-huh.
He comes in, and he is a, kind of a street tough. And yes. He just comes in. He just wants them to turn him down so he can get unemployment benefits. And, but it turns out they hire him because he doesn't pity him. And they all learn valuable lessons.
Right.
Now, I noticed that this
movie. On this movie.
On this. You know what? Here's what I'm going to say. Very well acted.
Yeah.
And if you like this kind of movie, if you're your parents.
Right.
You might actually enjoy it because it's very well made for that film.
Right.
But I challenge you this. You're going to watch this movie. You're going to say, oh, what a beautiful little French drama.
Yeah.
Tug the heartstrings.
Yeah.
If this movie was made in America, starring Jack Nicholson and Mos Def and directed by Chris Columbus, you'd want to kill yourself.
Right.
It's very trite. It's very, and it's based on a true story, but they picked the story, so that's not much of an excuse. It's very trite. There's a scene where, like, there's a stuffy upper rich class party, and then Omar Sy, like, makes them all dance to Earth, Wind, and Fire, and everyone's happy.
Are you making this up?
I'm not making that up.
Oh.
And to its
what
credit,
song? What song?
I didn't recognize it. It's not one of the big ones.
Not September?
I don't. Might have been. I'm not a music guy, so I don't
Do
always
you remember.
Remember? I think that was 20, it.
Yeah.
I think
of
that was it.
Of course it was.
Okay. All right. Anyway. But I digress. My point is that I'm watching this movie, and it's made with such skill.
I want to stab myself right now.
It's made with such skill that for moments at a time, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty. No, it's not. No, it's not. Well, that was a really cute. No. And I really wanted to. I really wanted to, because the acting is great. The acting is fantastic. Everyone in it's really good. But it's just such a familiar story, and they do nothing new with it. And it's just frustrating, and I feel like we're giving this movie, a lot of people give this movie a pass because it's a huge hit, especially abroad.
Right.
I feel like this movie gets a pass because it's French.
Yeah.
It's like, we forgive it because it's French. The French don't do anything, something that's populist.
Yeah, you can get away with a lot if you're in another language.
Yeah.
You can be really, really silly and trite.
Well, the thing I always think of is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which bombed in China.
Yeah.
Partially because they had all the actors who were mostly native Cantonese speakers speaking Mandarin, and apparently they sounded really bad. I can't tell.
Right.
So I was able to get past that. But it's also very Americanized in a lot of ways, and it didn't work for them. But we see it as, oh, it's this Chinese movie, but it has so many of these American aspects that we like. fused in with wuxia movies that actually have no place in that genre.
Right.
So Americans embraced it, Chinese hated it, and I'm kind of on the Chinese side. I digress. Untouchables, here's my thing. If you have to see Untouchables, if your parents are dragging you to this movie, and I've said this before.
You've got art house parents.
If you've got art, but you've also got sentimental parents.
They probably also built you a slide from your window to the pool.
That's true.
Yeah.
But if you're, the point is, if you're dragged to this movie, it's not the worst of its ilk.
Yeah.
You can get through this. You'll be like, okay, there will be moments that you can genuinely enjoy. It's okay. But it's not really to be celebrated.
Yeah.
This isn't like the next The Artist or anything like that.
Right.
It's just Chris Columbus, but in a foreign language. So there you go. That's my review of Untouchables.
Great.
That's my review of Untouchables. That's what I got. I can't think of anything else.
I think we're done.
I think we're good. How would you like us to sign off?
Well, Alonzo always. Oh God! See, here's the thing. When Alonzo is here,
yeah,
he does all the signing off stuff.
Oh no!
And I pretend that nothing's really going on. Like, I.
How many episodes of the show have you done, and you've never paid attention?
I think about jelly donuts when he's signing up.
Okay, all right.
He lists all the podcasts that we like that have our friends in them.
Okay.
Like yours, the B Movie
Podcast.
The
B Movies Podcast, the Crave Online, subscribe on iTunes.
And then a bunch of others that I like, and I can't. Wait, let me see. Secretly Timid.
Oh my God.
You should listen to Secretly Timid, and you should listen to
Popcorn Mafia.
The Comedy Couch, and you should listen to Popcorn Mafia.
Yeah.
And you should listen to
the B Movies Podcast, at Crave Online.
Other ones.
Yeah.
You should listen to other podcasts.
I'll throw one out there. And Sofa Dogs.
No, what's
with
that?
John Pavlich. He does commentary tracks that you can sync up to any DVD or Netflix you own.
Yeah.
Some of them are for obscure films. Some of them are big ones. Me and Whitney Seibold from the B-Movies podcast, we're going to record a new commentary track for Scream.
Nice.
With him. And previously, I've done April Fool's Day with him. I've done Trick or Treat. And I've done Child's Play.
Nice.
And 3 o'clock High. So he has wonderful, wonderful work. By all means, seek him out.
And then you're supposed to email us with questions, but I can't remember our email address.
Remember your email address? Is it linoleumknife at something?
It's linoleumcast at something. Look, if you go to our Facebook wall, go to our Facebook page.
Alonzo is dying right now. You realize this, right?
We're
killing him.
I know. You go to our Facebook page, the Linoleum Life Podcast Facebook page. If you really have a question that you or is very important for us, you can leave it. In a message.
Was there a question someone asked this week that you wanted to look at?
No. Because
Alonzo
sends me the questions.
Ah.
Because his computer doesn't.
I was looking forward to that. We don't get a lot of audience interaction.
He can't look at his computer, so he sends it to me and I read the letters. And we always have like two or three during a week.
Sorry about this week.
I'm.
Audience.
I'm an idiot.
He's a bit of an idiot.
This is why William Bibbiani is here helping me. But
I needed to help at this part.
Before Alonzo left town, I forgot to have him write down all the things that were necessary. And he's going to yell at me next week.
And he's going to yell at me for not thinking that. I kind of figured you'd have this part down. I kind of figured you'd know your email. All right, we should wrap this up because this is getting dull. Go to the Linoleum. What's the website? You know the website for your podcast, right?
Well, we're free on iTunes is what you should do.
Right, but I'm talking about if you want to contact.
Well, we don't have a site itself yet. We have a Facebook wall. So just go to our Facebook wall.
Go to the Facebook wall for Linoleum Knife. Search it out. Questions, talking.
Yes.
Anything you want to say.
Liking us.
Like
telling them. Telling your. The most important thing is if you listen to this show,
mm-hmm.
you have to tell like 10 people and make them do it because we need tens more listeners. We already have a few dozen, and we need to break 100.
I found out recently that some of our analytics numbers at the B-Movies podcast were really low. We found out we had one article at Crave Online that I thought had done a very respectable 6,000 hits.
Right,
that's respectable.
Yeah,
there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
turns out it was closer to 50.
50 people looked
50,000.
Oh, okay.
That's way off!
Right, well, yeah.
So our audience, what I'm saying is your audience might be larger than you think.
I know what our numbers are.
Okay.
And I'm exaggerating downward.
Okay.
To be truthful.
All right. I don't want you to be mean to yourself.
He tells me what the numbers are, and I'm like, that sounds nice, you know?
Yeah.
And then, but when I'm on, the truth is when I'm here on the microphone, I go, you know.
You get all self-deprecating and cute.
Two dozen people listen to this show.
Yeah.
They're the prettiest, sexiest, most lovely people.
I should know. I'm one of them.
Then, and if you could see the handsome face that's sitting here opposite me, you would know. He has long, lustrous hair.
I do.
You know that hair? That hair? Yeah. That hair makes you 15% metal.
Yeah.
Even if you're not.
I know. Yeah. That's why I keep it. Yeah. I look like a putz if I don't have the, have the hair. I'm losing it though. I'm starting to go bald. So I'm trying to keep this going as long as I can.
I got a little bald spot in the back of my head right
now.
Yeah,
I'm trying to keep this going. Once it stops like being able to, like, it's officially a comb over and not just I have a bald spot you can't really see.
Right.
Once that's it, I'm like, all right, fuck it, I'll just shave it until it's dead. But
right.
Yeah, I'm trying to enjoy it while I can.
Yeah.
I'm trying to enjoy it while I can. We have not talked about movies in like 20 minutes. So
goodbye.
Goodbye. Follow me on the B Movies Podcast and on Twitter at William Bibbiani and
okay, now we have to say goodbye again. Goodbye.